He ruled the ring for over a decade. This April 4th, live on pay-per-view, the immortal Hulk Hogan returns. WrestleMania.
Kids, Hulk Hogan is ready to give you the shirt right off his back. That's right, just ask your mom and dad to order WrestleMania on pay-per-view, and you'll automatically be eligible to win an autographed Hulk Hogan t-shirt. Don't miss WrestleMania, Sunday, April 4th, only on pay-per-view.
Booker, that's me, Jared, and a smart podcast host.
That's me, your boy, Jim Vicious.
Review infamous pay-per-views, see what went wrong, and we try to fix them. Today, we review what many call the worst WrestleMania of all time, WrestleMania 9. Jim, to me, this isn't the worst. I thought WrestleMania 11 was the worst, but this thing is dog shit.
It's pretty poor. The fans voted for this, so...
Yeah,
I blame them.
Yeah, well, I blame ourselves for coming up with this idea. If you guys haven't listened to the show before, what we'll do is we'll go through the pay-per-view, we'll talk about each match, and then we'll go back afterwards and rebook the damn thing. I have 15 members of the WWE Hall of Fame are in this match, or on this card, for the Hall of Shame: Jim Ross, Randy Savage, Bobby Heenan, Gorilla Monsoon, Shawn Michaels, Fatu, better known as Rikishi, Razor Ramon, Bob Backlund, Ted DiBiase, Hulk Hogan, Mr. Perfect, Paul Bearer, Yokozuna, Mr. Fuji, and the one and only Bret the Hitman Hart.
So much talent.
Yeah, there's a lot of talent here. And then, of course, The Undertaker will eventually be in the Hall of Fame, but he's not yet, so I couldn't add him there. What do you think of a parking lot in Las Vegas for WrestleMania?
Live from Caesar's parking lot.
It's the Roman Colosseum.
At least it was a show.
Yes.
You know, at least there was, like, some showiness to it. But, yeah, it's outside. I don't like outdoor shows.
Yeah, there's really. There's a moment, I can't remember which match, where you start to see the entire hard camera side fans put their hands over their eyes because it's starting, the sun has shifted.
I mean, Las Vegas, you're pretty safe, you know. It's not like it's going to rain, but I always worry about that when they have shows outside. It's like, what if it fucking rains, man?
It did, where was that? At MetLife when they had to put up the tarp?
Yeah.
But
I was thinking about that with, like, Road Wild, which I'm sure we'll get to, or Hog Wild, whatever the fuck
it
is.
Yeah, Road Wild.
Yeah.
But so this starts off with Gorilla Monsoon introducing us to Caesar's Palace, and he introduces us to the debut of Jim Ross in the WWF.
What do you think he was thinking, man?
His first show,
and he's wearing a fucking toga.
He's talked about this on his podcast, and he's like, he thought it was like a cool idea. Like, he didn't mind it. He thought it was an interesting idea. Randy Savage comes out, and he's all the pomp and circumstance, and then Bobby Heenan comes out backwards on a camel.
That was well done.
Heenan is money on this show, but I'll tell you what, as much as I love Randy Savage, I think he's one of the greatest in-ring performers, greatest promo men, he's maybe the worst commentator in the history of professional wrestling.
Yeah, he's not good. He's not good.
He's the king of non-sequiturs. There's a moment and I don't have it in my notes, but I remember watching the show, I put it in my head, I was like, there's a moment where he goes, Shawn Michaels, I know why he's here. High fly, yeah! WrestleMania 9, do it to do it. Like, what are you doing, Randy?
Do it to do it, man. He's also not wearing a toga.
So, all the pomp and circumstance. Like you said, though, this is actually kind of a cool idea. It was their first themed WrestleMania. They would do it again when they went to Hollywood, but that was like, you know, 14 years later, however, you know, 12 years later.
Right.
We went to Hollywood, but neat idea, terrible execution in the booking department, and to start off here.
Well, before that, even Finkus Maximus, dude.
Love it. Love the
Fink. And he introduces Caesar and Cleopatra, who are riding on an elephant that is literally feet from people, dude.
I thought, like, the best part, to really show you Jim Ross, he actually gives you a breakdown of the elephant in the ancient times. For those of you that don't know, an elephant was a lot like the sports utility vehicle of the ancient world.
He kills it, man, Jim Ross. But I just feel like, dude, if this elephant goes berserk, everyone's fucked, because they're literally like 2 feet away from this thing.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's a circus, too. Anytime an elephant decides he wants to just crush people, he will. But, you know... I just love Jim Ross. I'm surprised he didn't tell us what college the elephant went to.
He played football at the University of Oklahoma. That's a Sooner elephant.
And Bobby Heenan was just, he was great on this show. I really wish I would have given anything for Randy Savage not to be there. I love you, Randy. R.A.P., but goddammit, just a Jim Ross, Bobby Heenan show would have been amazing.
And I don't know who came up with, I mean, all the Heenan shit. The fact that he rides out backward. you know, how he gets off of it really sloppily, and he's got the bloomers on under his toga. It's just, it's fucking perfect, man.
Yeah, that was all Bobby. He wrote about that in his book. He came up with all those. Pretty much nobody told Bobby Heenan what to do. He just kind of came up with it on his own. And imagine that. He was entertaining, and unlike today's product, where no one gets to do what they want to do. But yeah, we're not here to talk about today's product. We're here to talk about WrestleMania 9.
Yeah, dude, live from a fucking parking lot. They're like, welcome to Caesar's Palace. Parking lot.
the Roman Coliseum, yeah. First match of the night. Intercontinental title match between Shawn Michaels and, as Bobby Heenan would call him, Tatanka. Tatanka.
The undefeated Tatanka.
Correct. Shawn was actually brought out to the ring by the debuting Luna Vachon, who you guys believe, yes, this was her first time being seen in the WWF.
Huh.
And Sherry falls out to Tonka, and she's dressed up like an Indian princess, because why not?
Because fucking racism. Yeah. Very disturbing.
Shawn, and of course, the backstory there is Shawn and her broke up after Marty Jannetty went to hit Shawn with a mirror, and Shawn moved Sherry in the way, and off they go. She's now babyface. She actually got a pretty sizable pop when she came out, more so than Tatanka. This crowd, not really behind the Tatanka, but... The crowd wasn't bad for this show, though. I mean, for a paid crowd in Las Vegas, not bad.
What's the weather? I mean, I think of Las Vegas, is it hot in April?
Oh, it was probably like 70, 80 degrees that day.
That's not so bad.
Yeah, I've been there in April. It's not bad. I mean, to get this match started, Shawn is bumping all over the place.
Yeah.
God damn, you forgot, like, he was great later on in his career, but he was like him and Mr. Perfect were just bump machines.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, Tatanka was never very good, so.
Yeah, but Shawn made him look really good here.
Yeah.
Try to find my notes here. He takes an arm drag, and off the top rope, Shawn does, and he does a flare flap and goes all the way to the floor.
Yeah.
And then he does a thumb to the eye and a botched sunset flip for two. Tatanka comes back with just a devastating armbar, and the momentum of the hot start of the match grinds to a halt.
Yeah, I mean, it started off pretty good. It got pretty boring, though.
Yeah, and then shoulder breaker, big elbow from Tatanka for two. And then Tatanka goes to the top rope, or second rope, I can't remember, and absolutely eats one of the best super kicks you're ever going to see that doesn't end the match.
That doesn't end the match.
Although Heenan says, that's it, it's done, sign the treaty.
Oh, that's good.
That's for two. And nice running clothesline off the apron by Shawn. And this was, of course, looking at it, just Luna Vachon on the outside debuting. Luna Vachon would later get a tit job. She doesn't have it here, though, so congratulations, Luna.
Everybody got tit jobs in WWE, man. They paid for that shit, probably.
God damn it, I don't want to look at your face. Let's give her big tits.
Give me something to look at, pal.
Pal? All right, I can't wait to get these big tits. Rest in peace, Luna.
She was way better with Bam Bam. When she was with Bam Bam, that was fucking awesome.
Yeah. Tatanka go babyface comeback here. Chop, chop, body press two, catapult. The post yields two. And again, just Shawn, just amazing. Shawn escapes the papoose to go, which is still my favorite name for any move ever. With a roll up.
Fuck that is.
The papoose to go is Tatanka's Samoan drop. It was basically his finisher.
Oh, what does that word mean?
I have no idea.
Well, Tatanka means buffalo, in case anyone's wondering.
Yeah. And papoose, I don't know. Sounds like a fucking Indian dish I'd get at a restaurant.
Can I get that a little less spicy? Thanks.
Can I get the medium papoose? I got to go, too.
Awesome.
And then basically the match ends via countout. Shawn Michaels pulls the ref to the outside, and rather than gets disqualified, he gets counted out.
It's a very weird finish, dude.
It was a weird flat finish. As you'll see, the majority of the show is really bad, stupid endings to what was a pretty decent match between Tatanka and Shawn Michaels. Probably Tatanka's best match.
If you can't blow off a match at WrestleMania, I don't know what the fuck you're doing.
Yeah, this whole thing is chock full of matches that have no ending to it. No definitive ending.
Did this have any build, really? Other than, like,
you Tatanka
know.
Beat Shawn one-on-one.
Oh, that's
in a
right.
Non-title match, and then he beat him in a six-man tag. But really, the feud that was going on was Tatanka and Marty Jannetty. So we'll get to that when we rebook it here.
Was Marty in trouble by this point, or fired for drugs or something?
Oh no, Marty had a match that was against I can't remember who, but I read it got nixed at the last minute because they ran out of time.
Mm.
So he was actually supposed to be on the show in a singles match. That's also why the Razor Ramon Bob Backlund match ends the way it does.
As the Iron Sheik would say, "Fuck Marty."
Oh, Marty Jannetty. Mean Gene.
I like Marty Jannetty.
I do too. I thought he was a house of fire. If he could have just stayed clean, he could have been pretty good. Never as good as Sean, but.
Fair enough.
Mean Gene interviews the Steiner brothers. This is the pay-per-view debut of the Steiner brothers in the WWF.
Mm.
Fresh off their, they just came from All Japan and WCW. And of course, Jim Ross sees the head shrinkers. He sees the Steiner brothers, and we get our first ever WWF slobber knocker reference.
Yeah, that's what I caught that too, man. The first ever slobber knocker reference in WWE.
To which, Jim Ross goes, "This is what we call in Oklahoma slobber knocker," and then Bobby Heenan goes, "Isn't that what you call the waitress down at the cafe in Tulsa?"
Dude, that guy. I mean, we sit and like suck Bobby Heenan's dick off all the time on this show, but God damn, he was the best.
He was just so quick, and. Randy Savage at one point in this match, after a Steiner line, which is what JR calls it, and then Macho Man goes, "I think that's a clothesline." Like, thanks.
God damn it, Randy.
Thanks, Randy. God, he's just the king of non sequiturs. I think he's lost half the time.
Right. And also, I know Bill Alfonso fucking ref in this match.
Yep, we can't escape Bill Alfonso. I'm pretty sure he's been on every show now, except the 99 Rumble.
Yeah, he's everywhere, man. You can't escape him. What do you think of this match? I thought this was a pretty good match. I like the Steiners.
By far the best match on the card.
That's sad.
Yep.
It's like all Steiners, too. I don't think the head shrinkers are really worth much of shit. But.
Oh, yeah. I thought they were good powerhouse tag team. They had good chemistry with the Steiners. The Steiners... excuse me. Steiners get double teamed real quick right off the bat. Steiners retaliate with a double Steiner line, and there it was. That was off the top rope, and that's where Randy Savage goes, "I think that's a clothesline." Oh. And Jim Ross must have been at home here knowing, because he had seen the Steiners in WCW and called their matches, so I bet he was comfortable here. This probably helped him calm down, because he wasn't really good in the first match, and then he got really good the rest of the night. I think this helped him calm down, just seeing two guys he knew so well.
Yeah. Exactly. Steiners are one of the best tag teams of all time.
Oh, definitely. They should be in the Hall of Fame if Scott Steiner wasn't a colossal fuck-up.
They're in the Suplex City Limits Hall of Fame, if that means anything to anybody.
It means everything. And Scott starts dominating Samu, but gets dumped right over the top. A big-time bump to the floor. And JR notes that this is probably what the action in the Roman Coliseum was like. I'm like, yeah, JR, I'm sure in the Roman Coliseum, a gladiator grabbed a side headlock and told the other gladiator what the next spot was.
Yeah, dude, tackle drop down, fucking.
Tackle drop down, stabbing with a trident.
That's awesome.
Scott Steiner takes the Ricky Morton route of things here as he's the baby facing peril. And the shrinkers turn this into a punch kick brawl. And this match, if they cut like 2 minutes from it, would have just been much faster paced and probably better. Rick gets the hot tag, and he does the old Samoan head spot. And Jim, why don't you tell the fans what happens when you ram two Samoans' heads together?
When you ram two Samoans' heads together?
Yeah.
They're shortly going to fucking ram both of their heads into yours.
Exactly. And an awesome spot here, though. The Samoans go for the doomsday device, and Rick catches and fucking slams Samu in mid goddamn air.
Yeah,
fucking ridiculous.
The Steiners were fucking awesome.
Steiners were taking this back to All Japan. Scott tags in again and finishes it with the Frankensteiner. 1, 2, 3, and pay-per-view debut for the Steiner brothers, beating the Head Shrinkers.
Yeah, dude, they were the shit. And two, that Japanese stuff that they did was fantastic as well.
Yes.
Definitely worth watching. Like when you see like the Steiners versus Road Warriors in Japan, that's crazy shit.
Amazing stuff.
Because that didn't happen anywhere. That didn't happen in WWF, probably, did it?
Not in WWF. I think it happened in WCW a few times.
That's good stuff.
Yes. Next up, Crush versus Doink the Clown. And,
correction, Kona.
Yeah, sorry,
Crush.
Kona Crush. I apologize. God damn it, pal. Get the name right.
Exactly.
We get a great promo from Doink the Clown, which is Matt Bourne. And if you don't know, this is the only good version of Doink the Clown. Don't go to your local VFW and watch whatever piece of shit Doink they trap out there or bring out there. This is the only good one because in this promo, Doink or Matt Bourne as Doink is laughing, and then all of a sudden he stops laughing and gets real serious. And that was the secret to how good Doink the Clown, the heel Doink the Clown, could be.
Dude, we are always too. That's another guy we always are like sucking his dick on this show. But dude, Matt Bourne as Doink is awesome.
God damn, Vince. But by the way, Doink was at the first WrestleMania, and he didn't appear again until WrestleMania 9 as a fucking clown. But I think if you asked him, would you rather be Doink or a fucking lumberjack?
Well, I was going to say, we covered a match where he was a lumberjack in
WCW.
He was good. He was good even then.
He's always good at whatever you give him. This match, however, given negative stars, this was complete and utter garbage. It was terrible, which is weird because these two actually had good matches against each other, just not here. Skip ahead here because there's just not much of the match. Crush goes for the Kona compactor, but the ref gets bumped and Doink rolls out and tries to crawl under the ring. Crush throws him back in and applies the compactor, but Doink number two, which is the debut of Doink number two, comes from under the ring, decks Crush with a prosthetic arm because why not?
Steve Kern, who would go on to, you know, play Doink not near as good as Matt Bourne.
Yep. And yep. Doink gets to pin. Ref wakes up. 1, 2, 3. Your match here at WrestleMania ends with a second Doink hitting a grown man named Kona Crush with a fucking prosthetic arm.
Yeah, that's what he's been doing, dude. That was weird, too, in the build to this where they're talking about it. He's like, he pulled his own arm off. Like, no, yeah. He's still got an arm there, dude. It's got a fake arm.
That was I've been watching the old Raws, and there's a moment where he's pulling the arm, the cast off, and the cast comes off. Vince McMahon goes, he took his arm off! And then Randy Savage goes, I think that's a cast!
Always fucking Randy, like, reeling it back in, dude.
Yeah, he's just offended that you would think his arm was ripped off or confused by the whole thing. Love you, Randy, but goddamn.
And then they do that, like, shitty fucking mirror spot.
Ugh. Yeah.
God, man. Yeah, this is poor.
By the way, may be the record for most bright colors in a match.
Oh, dude.
Crush is decked out in neon yellow, orange, and purple. Doink is red, blue, yellow with green hair.
Yeah, it was, it's just, like, the epitome of, like, what their thought was at that time with, like, the bright colors for kids and shit.
Yep. This was also the debut of Jim Ross calling someone a big hoss when referring to Kona Crush.
Big hoss.
I love Jim Ross.
Both these guys are dead, by the way.
Yes. Yep. There's a lot of dead people on this show.
That's always so depressing, man.
It is.
You watch this show, and like, these guys should still be here, and like, most of them aren't, and it's like, ugh.
Yep.
It's uncomfortable.
Speaking of uncomfortable, Razor Ramon takes on Bob Backlund.
I thought you were going to go for the Todd Pettengill. Trying to talk to Japanese people.
Yes. Go ahead. You tell the fans about that.
I don't know. It's just Todd Pettengill in the crowd trying to talk to Japanese people.
He's up in the euchre seats.
It doesn't make any sense, dude. It's just stupid. Like, what was the point of this segment? Is that supposed to make me laugh? Like, oh, Japanese people.
Well, they're trying to set up the whole Yokozuna as a national hero, even though he's a Samoan.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, Jesus. All right. Well, Razor Ramon taking on Bob Backlund. Razor Ramon is just a few weeks away from his face turn, but the crowd is already starting to chant for him.
Yeah.
So you could tell they want him. For whatever reason, I'm going to put this out there. This may be the most random match in the history of WrestleMania. Razor Ramon taking on a guy who hadn't been seen since the 80s, really.
Well, this is previous to Backlund coming back and like having that badass run with Bret Hart, right?
Correct. Yep. This is Bob Backlund coming back as the squeaky clean babyface from the 70s and 80s because... We haven't touched on this yet. This is right around the steroid trial for Vince McMahon. Vince McMahon thinks he's going away forever. So he brings back Bob Backlund. And could you imagine Razor Ramon and Bob Backlund trying to hang out together?
No,
squeaky
man.
Clean Bob Backlund. And here's Razor Ramon taking 14 somas.
Yeah, Bob Backlund won't give you an autograph unless you can recite all the presidents.
God damn it, Bob Backlund. I love
that's
that guy.
True. It's fucking, it's a shoot, man. But this match was weird to me, too, because Razor takes everything. You know what I'm saying? Like, Bob Backlund is, like, fucking throwing him around and, like, and then out of nowhere, like, he just gets the win by roll-up, man.
Yep.
Like, he didn't have anything. Razor got nothing in this match.
No, he didn't. It makes absolutely no sense. Bob Backlund does hit the atomic drop of death. And just like you said, out of nowhere, Razor Ramon gets an inside cradle, 1, 2, 3. And in just under 5 minutes, Backlund loses to fucking Scott Hall.
It was just weird to see Scott Hall do an inside cradle, period.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know, just like a guy who's like that size and shit. It's just like,
yeah, just a weird match. Like we said, this thing is just chock full of odd finishes. That's not the oddest finish we're gonna see of the night, but man, it's weird. I'd like to point out, like I said, that match was cut. A few minutes were cut from it because they were already running long, and I'm like, how is it running long? But then you realize the Steiners and the Head Trickers probably went longer than they should have.
Yeah, but it was like the fucking only good match thus far.
True.
Might be the only good match on the whole fucking show.
Yes. Well, yeah. I would say the Shawn Michaels Tatanka match was really good.
Okay. Passable.
Yeah. This match isn't bad either. The next one up, WWF Tag Team Title Match, Money Inc., Ted DiBiase and the IRS taking on the Megamaniacs, Hulk Hogan and his good buddy Brutus the Barber Beefcake, and Hogan comes out sporting the biggest shiner ever.
Yeah, from a jet ski accident.
That's what he says. But if you ask Ted DiBiase, it's because it's easy to hire someone to beat Hogan up outside of a gym.
Yeah, exactly. Dude, I don't know, man. I just fucking Hogan and Beefcake, too. Like, he helped that guy so much. Like, Beefcake owes everything to that guy.
Yeah, he does. A lot of guys in the business, a few guys in the business, too. I do like that they did work in his, because you just couldn't hide it. So they worked it in the storyline that Ted DiBiase hired goons to take out Hulk Hogan.
I did like that, yeah.
Yep. Hogan gets a decidedly pretty lukewarm reaction considering, you know, he's Hulk fucking Hogan.
Yeah, I think it's, I think the tide is turning at this point, man.
Yeah, I think, and you can see the guy has, like, no muscle definition. Like, I'm not in great shape, but this is not the Hulk Hogan we were used to. This was steroid trial Hulk Hogan.
Yeah, man, and too, it's like, it's 1993, so at this point, how long have you been, I mean, you've been doing the Hulkamania shit for a long time.
Yeah, a decade, I believe. Was it 1985, correct, right? Yeah, no, he'd been doing Hulkamania since 83, and then 85 was the first WrestleMania, when he really exploded. I mean,
like, yeah, like the late 80s was the glory days of that, so by this point, it was already like, And then think about the fact that he went on to go to WCW and still do the Hulkamania thing until, like, what, 97 or whatever?
Yeah, 96, yep.
96? Yeah. Oh, my God.
Dude, fun fact, fun trivia for you folks. Everyone in this match would later to go on to be in the NWO.
Hmm.
I don't know, it took me by surprise. I was like, wait a minute, yeah.
That's interesting. Fucking Michael Wall Street, dude.
Yep. IRS, Mike Rotunda, the father of the WWE, the SmackDown heavyweight champion, Bray Wyatt.
Should tell and also Bo Dallas, but he probably doesn't talk as much about that.
But anyway, so the match here, DiBiase immediately plays the heel in peril as the Mega Maniacs pummel the champions at will. And this, you know, I take it back. There's nothing to this match. I was wrong.
I thought this was shit.
And finally, the champs just simply walk away. And Earl Hebner does the 10 count bit. But then he says, if you don't get in at 10, you lose the titles because, you know, why? Why isn't that just a rule? Yeah, you can't just decide on the fly. Or if you can, why don't you do it for every championship match?
Yeah. That's back when this was like, that happened all the fucking time.
Yeah.
You know, back in the day, champion, heel champion, just leave. Fuck you.
DiBiase eventually slaps on the million-dollar dream, to which Hogan just basically no-sells it. And at that point, Randy Savage says, the people are hanging from the rafters. Although this is the Roman Colosseum, doesn't have rafters, but it has columns, and people are hanging from them.
God damn it. Fucking Randy.
Oh. And then we got a double knockout. Hogan revives first. Hogan hot tags in Beefers and punches away, sadly. Oh, DiBiase nails Beefcake with the suitcase, and now Beefcake
nails him with the Beefcase. Hashtag Beefcase. Yeah.
briefcase. And Beefcase's broken face is in peril again. If you guys don't know, that was the gimmick. Like, his face was just made of rusty parts at this point.
Yeah, he could break his face, man.
Oh.
What an Achilles heel that is.
Your face?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, and then DiBiase pulls off the protective mask worn by Beefcake. And at this point, I put in my notes, this match is going on way too long. So, Beefcake with another sleeper, this time on the IRS. And the ref gets bumped, because that's what we needed. Hogan gets the hot tag, ref's still out, big boot, and both Money Inc. members get nailed with the protective mask of doom, but the ref is still out. Jimmy Hart comes in and counts the pin himself, because we all thought that would work.
Yeah.
Like, the crowd does pop for it, but I... How, as a fan, are you not just like, well, this is going to, this is obviously going to be reversed. This is just stupid.
Yeah.
But Danny Davis runs in and disqualifies the challengers for hitting Money Inc. with the mask.
Yeah.
So, terrible.
But Hogan
match.
Poses anyway.
Hogan must pose.
Yeah, Hogan must pose, dude. Exactly.
I just don't get it. I don't understand why you couldn't just let the Mega Maniacs win the tag titles here.
Because Hogan's about to win the fucking world title.
Yeah. God damn it. I hated this finish. This was so stupid.
Yeah.
I don't know why anybody thought Jimmy Hart could be a referee.
No.
It doesn't make sense. Wait, is Jimmy Hart in the Hall of Fame?
He's in our Hall of Fame.
Is he in the WWE? Because if not, if he is, then I forgot him on my list.
I don't know. If so, if not, that's pretty fucking cheesy. Yeah, baby.
And then Toad Pedophile finds Natalie Cole at ringside and the owner of Caesar's Palace and tries to get a free room out of him.
Yeah.
And then with next match, Mr. Perfect takes on the Narcissist.
Oh, God. As you know from this show, I fucking hate Lex Luger.
There are times I like Lex Luger. This isn't one of them.
Dude, was he not, like, better than this, like, before this in WCW?
Oh, he was fantastic, but they also hit him with great workers in WCW.
Yeah, I guess that's maybe the... Well, I mean, he had Perfect here, so, like, why did he suck?
Because Kurt Hennig didn't like him, and Kurt Hennig, if he doesn't like you, is so good that he can make you look like shit while making himself look good, so...
It's like, you can't win with that, man. Like, Hennig's so good, he can fucking make you look like shit and himself look awesome.
Yeah. Fun fact, I'm going to start tallying these up. Both these men would later go on to be in the NWO.
Son of a bitch.
This is a fun game. I should have started this earlier.
Son of a bitch, man.
The Narcissist gimmick, though, was pretty fucking good for Lex Luger.
It's better than Mr. America.
Yeah, which, by the way, for fans that don't know, he would later on, within just a few months, he would be Mr. All-America and slam Yokozuna on the Intrepid.
Yeah, he'd be Hulk Hogan number two.
Yep. Without the success of Hulk Hogan.
Yeah, it didn't work.
Yep. But, the match starts with exchange of headlocks, wrist locks that don't go anywhere. Hennig kicks away at Luger's knee and chops him so hard it echoes through through the parking lot at Caesar's Palace. I mean, that was a fucking hard chop. You could tell when Hennig didn't like a guy immediately by how hard he chopped him.
Yeah. And also, dude, there's weird things in here, like, where Luger should just kind of fall. But instead, like, he squares up and does, like, a fucking textbook flat back bump. Did you notice this? It was kind of a weird thing I noticed.
That's always Luger. He was always taking weird, like, protecting himself like, in a lot of ways.
Shit where you should have fallen or, you know, he kind of, like, he's just, like, square up, flat back bump. It's, like, so looks so fucking horrible.
You know who else does that? And now you'll notice it because I said it. Kane.
Oh, fuck.
Kane never took a bump the way you should. He always took it away to protect himself. And guess what? He had like a 20-year career, so more power to him, I guess. But it looks like dog shit.
Heenan sucks, man. His matches suck because he never took a real bump ever.
Yeah. Heenan takes a bump into the corner and tries to flip over but can't make it, so I hate when that happens. Luger goes to work with the back with the loaded forearm of doom.
The bionic, why did they do that with him, the bionic elbow?
I don't know. I don't know why he didn't just... And that was a WCW thing, though, too.
Oh, was it really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I guess it was.
Yeah, because he had his arm broken by, I think it was the Four Horsemen, broke his arm in a car door was the storyline.
Oh, yeah.
Excuse me. A lot of kick and punch here as Luger gets two with the attempt here. Hennig, with a sunset flip and a sleeper. Here comes the comeback. Small package for two. Cross corner whip and slingshot to the post gets two. And, you know, you just start to see Hennig go through the motions of his matches because this just starts to look like every Mr. Perfect match if he's bored.
Yeah.
The way he bumps and the way he's taking things. And Luger gives the loaded forearm of doom and knocks Hennig out, chases Luger to the back. And I lost it here. I lost the finish here. My notes, I must have deleted them. How'd this match end? Because that's after the match.
Luger got the win.
Yeah, but how?
I don't know. The bionic elbow.
Yeah, sure. No, they fight over a backslide, and Luger gets the pin.
Oh, and then he bionic elbows him after that. Yeah,
and Hennig has both of his legs in the second rope.
Yeah.
And then Luger, because he just kills him with that loaded forearm of doom. And there we go. And then Hennig chases Luger to the back and is promptly attacked by Shawn Michaels to start their feud. Which ended up being a disappointing feud.
Yeah, dude, we did that already, didn't we?
Yeah, SummerSlam 1993.
Dude, that was like one of those two, just such a letdown. Like, I remember watching that and seeing those two guys. I'm like, okay, here we go. Like, no.
Yep, that was a disappointing. And if you want to hear our review of that SummerSlam 1993, because it actually comes into how I book this show, go ahead and go back into the archives, find that one. I believe it was episode 3.
There you go.
All right. Giant Gonzalez, or as you like to call him.
El Gigante.
Versus The Undertaker. And The Undertaker has a vulture with him.
I thought that was cool, dude.
It was. It's the most interesting part of this match.
No, I thought that was cool. What happened to Giant Gonzalez's fur, man? Like, did he have fur first, yes. And then they started painting it?
Yep, because he debuted with the fur around his dick at the Royal Rumble.
I missed the real fur. What's the point of painting it? I never understood any of this. Like, the muscle suit, the painted on fur, it doesn't make any sense to me, man.
Well, I think it comes from the fact that Vince McMahon was currently on the trial of his life, so he couldn't focus on shit. So stuff like the Giant Gonzalez coming out with tufts of fur on his dick sort of passed through the... Giant Gonzalez, by the way, this is, I think, his fourth appearance on this show. At least the third.
Oh, there's a lot of WCW appearances for him at one point there. Yeah.
Yeah.
I fucking hate him. He's the goddamn worst, man.
Oh, he's probably the worst worker in the history of the business. That got any kind of push.
Him or Kali?
Oh, I'd say Kali was better. Kali actually had some decent matches with The Undertaker. Like,
they should have had some matches, dude.
All right, well, you know. Look, you're talking about a guy who's like legit like 7'4". He's not going to be able to do a whole lot, but he did more than the Giant Gonzalez.
Well, Giant Gonzalez is like 7'7" or something. 7'6"? I don't know. He's fucking huge.
He comes in at an official 7'5" tall.
Okay, well, that's pretty fucking tall.
So if you guys don't know this, the match was 22 hours long, and it ended with chloroform soaked rag, and this is the most underwhelming win of the streak for the Undertaker.
Yeah,
draws a DQ.
Wins by DQ.
Yep, not even like anything of note here from Bobby Heenan that I have in my notes, or Randy Savage or Jim Ross.
No, and we can blame fucking billionaire Ted for Giant Gonzalez being a wrestler.
Really?
It's his fault. Yeah, because they brought him over to play for the Atlanta Hawks.
Oh yeah,
and he does
yeah.
This dog shit, and then like Ted's like, send him over to WCW. Like, fuck, man.
Oh well.
This match sucked though, bad.
Oh, it was terrible. Worst match of Undertaker's. Probably his career, at least his WrestleMania career. But, hey, the streak continues that would eventually be stopped by Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania 30.
Unfortunately. Dude, is there anybody who had to work just more shitbags than, like, Undertaker?
Well,
like, every tall or fat or, you know, just anything sack of shit, he had to work him, man.
Yeah, I feel bad for him. I do.
It's like he had to work Kali too. Did he lose to Kali?
Yeah, he lost to him a few times.
Oh my god!
And then Mean Gene interviews Hulk Hogan, which should be a bad sign for us fans because Hulk Hogan, what are you doing here before the big main event?
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
Hogan
must pose. Did you know? And you know what? I'll save it for afterwards. Bret Hart versus Yokozuna. Bret Hart in his book. Talked about how he had this great match lined up with Yokozuna, and him and Yokozuna sat and worked it out for the day before, and then he shows up the morning of, and guess what? Vince McMahon calls Bret into his office and says, Hulk Hogan's going to be champ, pal.
Yeah, yeah, right. I read this whole, the whole story about this from his book, and goddamn, man.
Yeah, it just sucks because, and then you know Hogan's going to return the favor at SummerSlam, and then doesn't.
Well, of course, dude. Yeah, that's how many times has Hogan told somebody like, "Oh, you know, we'll get you back," and fuck no, never.
Yeah, just not good. And this pretty much set the stage for the worst run of. The WWE probably had in a for the next decade. This 1993 after this is the worst business they would do, even yeah. with Hogan as champion. I honestly think they should have kept it on Brett. Brett knew how to work, especially with Yokozuna. This is probably one of Yokozuna's better matches in the WWE. WWF. Yeah,
Brett talks about too how he kind of he just took a crap on the match too. Yokozuna was doing all kinds of shit he wasn't supposed to be doing, and
yeah. Yeah, he said in his book they had like 12 minutes planned out, and by about the fourth minute, Yokozuna was going home.
Yeah, dude.
Just skipped over a bunch of it. Because like you alluded to, it's probably 85, 90 degrees maybe in Las Vegas. Yokozuna's yeah. a big guy. Yokozuna's, you know, not the 700 pounds Bobby Eaton said he was.
And, dude, that's the thing, too, is like I'm a fat fuck. And, you know, my like my mind is blown by the, some of the shit that guy does, you yeah. know?
Actually hits a beautiful super kick in this match.
Yeah, but it's so, and it's so funny too. Like, okay, so he, you know, he beats Hart by Jin, and then they challenge Hogan, and he's like, Yokozuna can barely stand up. He's so visibly exhausted.
Yeah,
it's hilarious.
To get through the match, Brett really wrestles a great match here. Just a smart, brilliant way of doing things. Constantly luring Yoko near the ropes, and then he tripped him on the bottom rope. Slingshots in with a diving headbutt. Goes for an elbow from the second rope. And then it just takes a big shit because Yoko just takes over. And yeah. it's just that slow, plodding Yokozuna rest hold. Yokozuna does this. Then he eats a boot on the cross-corner charge, and Brett gets two. And then, boom, super kick. And then more deadly nerve pinching. And Brett hits the sharpshooter. And the devious Mr. Fuji chooses that moment to toss a huge pile of cocaine into Brett's eyes.
Well, dude, the thing with this was is, like, that was all so early that he wasn't even ready for that. You can see how long he holds him in there.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got him in the sharpshooter for a while, and he's kind of like, all right, this is where you're supposed to. And, like, Fuji's like, oh, shit, this is where you're already?
Yep. Fuji was definitely not in place because that match ended. I like at one point Jim Ross says, you know, 10 minutes here into this sun, in this sun beating down on him. It was 6 minutes into the match.
Yeah, right.
And, so that's it. That's the end of your match. Yoko rolls up Brett, who can't see, so apparently he can't kick out.
Yeah.
1, 2, 3. I'd say this is like a 2-star match. 2.5. Probably yeah, could have gotten three out of it had they been able to actually do everything they wanted to do.
Yeah. I don't know about Yokozuna as like the whole, like the really, really fat guy. Like fat guys, yes, but like super fat guy.
Well, Vince needs big guys, and since he can't have steroided big guys, he's got to have fat guys.
Fat guys, yeah.
Hulk Hogan comes in to protest, and instead of getting the ref to reverse the decision, like any babyface would, he gets a challenge from Mr. Fuji, who says, "Bye, Yokozuna! Can beat you, too!" Why? Yokozuna, like you said, is just sucking air here.
Oh, dude. He looks like shit. He looks like he's about to fucking die back there.
Yep. And, I guess that's... Again, I don't understand. It doesn't make any sense.
No, and then 22 seconds, fucking leg drop, Hogan must pose, dude.
Yoko gets hit in the face with salt by Mr. Fuji, and Hogan, like you said, hits the leg drop, 1, 2, 3, and is once again the WWF World Heavyweight Champion.
Yeah, it was just a poor decision to go back to Hogan here at this point.
Yep, and then after the show went off the air, after all the posing, Vince McMahon came down to the ring and hugged Hulk Hogan. And as he hugged him, said, "It's good times again, brother."
On camera?
No. I said after everything was done.
Oh, okay.
Everything goes off the air. He hugs him and says, "It's good times once again, brother." Like, no. This was terrible. The crowd did really. It was a good sizable pop for Hogan winning the title.
Yeah. So. Well. So when did he finally leave?
He loses to Yokozuna at King of the Ring.
Oh, yeah.
And then he's gone.
And then he's gone to do Thunder in Paradise.
Thunder in Paradise.
One of the worst fucking shows ever.
Oh, yeah. But, yeah, he would eventually... By the way, there was absolutely no build-up to this for Hogan, to this WrestleMania, because he wasn't even supposed to be on the card. He was shooting Mr. Nanny.
Oh, yes, the film classic.
Yep, and then he was added at the last moment, just a few weeks out, and yep, within a few weeks, he's the World Heavyweight Champion, not Bret Hart, not Yokozuna. It's Hulk Hogan. Mm. Oh, probably, Jim, probably the worst WrestleMania ever. I still say WrestleMania 11. Where would you put it?
I'm not as familiar with 11. Like, it's really weird. For some reason, this one being the dog shit, I knew everything that happened here, like, before I watched it this time. You know, like, some shows we watch, I'm like, eh, I don't really know what's going on. Like, this show, I knew, like, every which way, so I don't know why that is. 11, I'm not so familiar with. What was, refresh me on 11.
11 was Shawn Michaels versus Diesel and LT versus Bam Bam Bigelow. Those are the two big matches on that card.
Yeah, that's shit.
Yeah, yeah, I put that one firmly as the worst of all time.
Are there good matches on there? Because there's like
not a single good match. Not a single good match on that card. If you want to watch anything from that, watch Shawn Michaels completely fuck over Diesel, his friend, by just sandbagging him constantly and doing babyface shit that just takes everything away from Diesel and just absolutely kills Diesel's babyface. Love Shawn.
I don't think I'm going to watch it because I'm sure that we'll have to watch it for this eventually, so...
Well, all right. Well, let's get into rebooking this bad boy. So for me, the Intercontinental title match should have never started the night with a fucking DQ or count out, whichever one you want to call it. I would have made it a triple threat. It would have been Shawn Michaels versus Tatanka versus Marty Jannetty.
Did they do that kind of shit back then?
Yeah, there were triple threats back then. And not as often as they are now, but I'm going to put it in there. And I have Shawn Michaels pinning Marty Jannetty so Tatanka can stay undefeated, but you get a definitive ending to a match. You could even have Tatanka hit the Papoose to go, and then Shawn or Luna low blow, do something to distract it so Shawn steals the win, but it makes Tatanka look strong.
Are we going to use Tito Santana or Papa Shango from the dark match?
If you want to, yeah. I don't.
What is Papa Shango, dude? Papa Shango and Doink, dude, just for fucking nonsense? No.
Well, you gotta remember, Kona Crush and Doink was a very long feud.
God, remind me.
Yeah. I'm not changing anything about the Headshrinkers versus the Steiner Brothers.
Nope.
Well, maybe shave off a couple minutes, because it did start to get drag on in the middle, but...
It was 14 minutes.
Yeah, maybe give him just 10, and it would have been faster paced, but goddamn. Best match on the card. You changed it from Crush to Papa Shango.
I don't know, just because like the absurdity of Doink versus Papa Shango would be amusing to me.
Yeah, but Papa Shango was a heel; they would have never done heel versus heel.
Right. It's not a good booking decision. I'm just being a dick. I don't know.
Maybe you know what I would have had. I don't even know what you'd do with Crush versus Doink the Clone to make it better. It's just a shit match.
Yeah, it's just shit.
You know what? I'm not even... It's hard not to have Doink on a show here, though. I'll say I would cut it and give more time to Razor Ramon and Bob Backlund. But, God damn it. God damn it,
unless the match was more focused on the... Because this whole match was focused on the gimmick later of the second one. You know, him kind of trying to get under the ring all the time.
Yeah.
Maybe if they just had, like, a more legit match.
Yeah, I guess because they had good matches, and maybe if they weren't constantly focused on trying to get to the second Doink spot, it would have been better. Just let him have a normal match, and then the second Doink shows up. And maybe don't have him hit him with a fucking prosthetic arm. It was weird. Have him hit him with a chair or something that actually, you know, looks like it would hurt.
Yeah, I don't know what the prosthetic arm, why that was a reoccurring thing.
I don't know. It was funny. I don't know.
It's a fake arm, pal. It's funny.
Well, goddammit. It'll be hilarious. Actually, probably it was. Oh, I don't give a fuck. I'm on trial. I can go away forever. God damn it! Hit him with an arm. I don't care.
Hit him with an arm.
Oh, all right. So, Razor Ramon versus Bob Backlund. I would admit it. Why not just have it be an actual squash match where Bob Backlund gets no fucking offense and Razor Ramon just kills him?
Yeah.
That would have been much better than watching Bob Backlund beat up on Razor Ramon for 3 minutes and then take a fucking inside cradle.
Yeah, that's true.
Just dumb. I would have had Hulk Hogan and Brutus Beefcake win the tag titles here.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. a much better decision. I mean, you still get a Hogan pose, and you don't have to like fuck up your main event situation.
Yep. I would have had them win. Probably would have cut about 4 minutes from the match because it had dragged the fuck on. Oh, also in my rebooking, Randy Savage isn't on this show. Not as a commentator. Not happening.
Well, of course, you know, the Hogan match gets like the most time. 18 minutes for that match.
Yeah, dude. I'm cutting like 6 minutes out of that bad boy.
Yeah.
And maybe I'll give a couple more minutes to, because we just keep cutting. You know what? Because we keep cutting, maybe we could add in Big Boss Man versus somebody here. Because he's not on this show, and it's the first show we've had that he's not on. Yeah, you could do Big Boss Man versus Tito Santana in like an 8 minute match.
Is he on the roster at this time?
Yeah. Yeah, Big Boss Man is.
Oh,
yeah, because it was supposed to be Big Boss Man versus Marty Jannetty, but they got cut.
Oh, okay.
That's what it was, yeah. So, yeah, have Big Boss Man versus Tito Santana in here somewhere and have a pretty good match. I mean, both those guys could work pretty well.
You think Boss Man could work pretty well, but we've shit on them every time we've seen him.
That's true. Never mind. You know what, though? If you give him 8 minutes with Tito Santana, it would probably be pretty good.
Let me remind you of the Mexican death match fucking from Sold Out.
Hugh Morris. Without a Mexican in the Mexican death match that ended in your a name count is, out.
Your name is Hugh Morris? What? yeah, dude, a fucking Mexican death match with no Mexicans in it.
Yeah, I just... Anyways.
In Iowa.
Yeah.
Okay, let's move on.
Mr. Perfect versus the Narcissist, Lex Luger. God damn, on paper, this was a pretty good match. Just didn't happen that way. Another weird finish. Why not just have the Narcissist or Mr. Perfect beat the Narcissist? And because he's going into a feud with Shawn Michaels, you might as well make him look strong. Mm-hmm. And the Narcissist was eventually going to be turning babyface anyways.
Yeah, well, so, I don't think they knew that at this time.
That's true. Yeah, but I just don't get why. How does Mr. Perfect look good losing this match and then immediately get an intercontinental title feud with Shawn Michaels?
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. He should have went over in it, you're right.
Yeah, I'd probably cut 2 minutes from this match. Mr. Perfect beats Lex Luger via roll-up or something to make, you know, you can still make the Narcissist look good, and Mr. Perfect just outthought him at the last moment.
All right, maybe we can use Papa Shango against Undertaker, dude.
Well, no, because remember, we rebooked this entire feud at the 1993 SummerSlam, which is what I'm about to get into. The Giant Gonzalez versus The Undertaker. The Undertaker just beats the Giant Gonzalez. Just beats him. Because if you remember, in the 1993 SummerSlam, we said after that, Harvey Whippleman, that's his manager, right?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Harvey Whippleman turns on the Giant Gonzalez, and Bam Bam Bigelow attacks him, thus setting up a feud between The Undertaker and Bam Bam Bigelow.
That would have been the shit.
Yeah. And that was our plan at the 1993 SummerSlam when I said, okay, why not just have The Undertaker beat the Giant Gonzalez?
Did you go back and listen to this, or do you remember this?
I just remember it.
Yeah, man, it's amazing what the mind can do if you don't fucking do drugs.
God damn it, pal. I have The Undertaker winning. Sure, make it a 5 minute match, just like it was 6-7 minutes, whatever it ended up being. And just have The Undertaker definitively beat the Giant Gonzalez and have Harvey Whippleman get all pissed off and turn on him the next night on Raw or the next taping of Raw.
I like it.
And then the WWF title match, Bret Hart versus Yokozuna. I thought they had the right amount of time, but it got cut because Yokozuna is such a fat fuck.
Yeah.
But I wonder if they didn't rush through it because Yoko thought he had to do more afterwards. So maybe if you told Yoko he was going to actually win the belt and not have to wrestle Hulk Hogan afterwards, he may have been able to do better. I don't know.
But yeah.
I would have had Yokozuna win this match. The same way, just allow them to have a better match. I wonder if the cloud of having Hulk Hogan have to be in the match ruined it for him.
Was that his first championship reign?
Yes, it was.
No?
Yep.
Oh, it was.
Yep. He is the shortest reigning champion in WWF history.
How bad does that make you look, man? Like he comes and kicks ass all over the place. He gets the belt for fucking 5 seconds. I mean.
Yep.
Yeah, you could have had him. You could have had him beat Hart here, and you could have went any direction you wanted to after that. And Hulk Hogan fucks off.
Yeah, but you could still have Hulk Hogan come out and, you know, start to get upset with the referee. And then, oh, look, Yokozuna attacks Hulk Hogan post-match. Hogan then beats up Yokozuna, leg drop. Then you still get your Hogan pose, and you set up a match between Yokozuna and Hulk Hogan at the fucking King of the Ring.
Yeah.
You know, it makes Bret Hart, it doesn't make Bret Hart look like a chump, and it doesn't make Yokozuna look like a bitch.
I think they thought their poor business at this point was, you know, was due to Bret and being champ.
Which just wasn't the case. It was just, you know, the whole business had cooled off, and the steroid trial was definitely on everyone's mind. But,
well, yeah, and like the shit they did in the 93 too, like, you know.
Yeah, it was not a great time for the WWF. It wouldn't even get good again until late 96, early 97. So this is definitely the dark period for the WWF. But Bret Hart did the best he could, was way over in Europe, was probably the most, who's even more over than Hulk Hogan in Europe. And
yeah.
When business was down, they took, the reason Bret got the title is he was so popular in Europe, and they were going to do a big European tour. And then he was going to drop the belt at WrestleMania to Yokozuna. And then for no reason whatsoever, Hulk Hogan gets put into the title picture. I wouldn't have done that. Like I said, though, if you need Hogan must pose, why not have Hogan beat up Yokozuna after the match, after Yokozuna jumps in for checking on Bret?
Yeah, or you could have just posed when he won the tag belt.
Both, though. You got to go. To this point, you had never had a WrestleMania main event that didn't feature Hulk Hogan.
Yeah.
Every single
and
one of them.
Looked like finally they would have to, and they like figured out a way to not, you know?
Yeah, it's just, this was dumb. It definitely cooled, just cooled Bret off way too much. Eventually, Bret would get the, be a long road back to the title for Bret. But again, probably the second worst WrestleMania of all time. We did the best we could with what we had. I don't think this was the best rebooking we've done, but damn it, I think we could have made it better with some definitive endings to matches.
Yeah, I mean, there's not a lot you can do with this, really.
Yeah, I think the key points out of this would have been how good that triple threat match would have been between Marty Jannetty, Michaels, and Tatanka, and how good the feud between Bam Bam and Undertaker could have been.
Yeah, your options are also limited when we're taking it into account what we've done on other shows that are nearby, so we're like, we're actually, you know, at some point we could actually have a whole arc of what we're doing in WWF 93.
I was gonna say, if we had done it in order, we should have done WrestleMania, King of the Ring, then SummerSlam.
Yeah.
We could have actually had that. God damn it, why didn't we think of that before?
I don't know.
We should do that at some point. We should just pick a year and pick a company and just rebook it.
Maybe one where they only had like 4 pay-per-views or something.
Yeah, yeah, like a 1991 WCW.
Oh, fuck. You know? Well, I'm down for that, dude.
Yeah, and then we'll just go, all right, here's the 4 pay-per-views we're going to do for 1990. We'll put up a fan poll. It just says 1991 WCW, 1991 WWF, 1993 WWF, 1993 WCW. And then we'll just pick the 4 pay-per-views from that year, and then we'll just rebook it all out.
That'll be interesting. So run everything a year up to WrestleMania / Starcade.
Yeah, that'll work.
Oh shit, son!
I think we just came up with a brilliant idea right here live on air. But what do you got to plug here, Jim? I know you got a heart out here, so.
Yeah, man. You know, Suplex City Limits. You're already on that channel. You probably listened to that show already, but.
Oh, yeah.
You know, listen to it.
The latest episode had Terry Funk on it. That was pretty cool. And Bob Caudle.
Yeah, right. It's definitely fucking star-studded, man. But yeah, that's, you know, everyone listening to this already knows my shit, I think.
All right, well, I don't know if I'll ever do another Fully Loaded podcast, but we'll see. I've talked to a few guys about doing interviews for it, but that's that. And I think we can put a bow on this right under an hour. Not a bad